Well, good afternoon, and my name is Doug Bigger, and I'm co-moderating this with Kathy Kinnett, who you just heard from a few minutes ago, and has been very involved with our pre-conference on transition. It's my privilege to be here with this wonderful panel, and we've spent an hour together. I'm learning a great deal, and I know you're going to learn a great deal as well. And so our purpose in being here with these men is really to share thoughts, ideas, questions. And the questions really can come from parents, they can come from other young men in the audience, anyone who would like to ask questions. If you're not comfortable asking a question in this forum, they're going to be cruising the halls for the next couple of days. They'd love to hear from you, so take advantage of that. The format that we're going to do is we're going to ask the men here to introduce themselves and give a brief 30-second a summary of where they are at in training and life. And then we have a couple of questions about independence. There are really three questions. What does independence mean for them? What advice do they have for parents to encourage independence? And what advice do they have or thoughts do they have for young men who are trying to become independent as well? And then the fun begins, and we're going to open it up to the mics to you. Please come and ask them questions. They're prepared for anything you want. We have almost 45 minutes, so the first part will take about 15 minutes, and then we'd really like to engage you and have you engage them. So I'll ask, Tejas, you want to start off? Can you? And we'll just introduce each other.
I'll just do this. Okay, so my name is Tejas Sarampudi, and I'm from New Jersey, and next year, I'll be entering my senior year of high school.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Piacentino. I'm going to be entering my junior year in college, attending Nazareth College outside of Rochester, and studying biology, hopefully get a chem minor under my belt, and see where that takes me.
I'm Jordan Pleasant, and I'm 17, and I will be a senior in high school this coming year.
Thanks, Jordan. Patrick? I'm Patrick Denger. I'm just graduated from high school and will be attending University of New England in the fall, and I'll also hopefully be getting my license.
To drive.
Go ahead, Max. Hi, I'm Max Gravenstein. Okay. Hi, I'm Max Gravenstein. I just finished ninth grade. I'm 15 years old, and yeah.
Max is a little shy.
Hey, everyone. My name is Ben Cumbo. I'm finishing up my graduate degree at the George Washington University, a degree in Middle East Studies. And I also just finished a job at the State Department where I was working in their Middle East Affairs Bureau, basically. So I'm just here to talk about my experience from undergrad to up to now, so. Hopefully I can impart some good insight to you guys.
Hello, my name is Benjamin Dupree. I'm a junior at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas, and I have a license to drive. I am also currently in the process of trying to get a job and move into an apartment while also attending SMU.
So that's our incredible panel for this afternoon. And if we're talking about independence, this is what independence looks like. And now we'll get a little sound of what it sounds like. And we're just going to, I'm not going to look at anyone, so there's no pressure on them to respond. Just to ask them, the men, what independence means for them. Who was? Ben, you want to start?
Yeah, I guess I'll start off here. For me, independence is about finding a balance between accepting help from others, but also having the agency within yourself to actually step outside of your comfort zone and actually do things that sort of make you an independent person, such as living on your own, driving on your own, communicating with others, interacting with others, getting a job. Basically, the things that normal people sort of take for granted when they're transitioning into adulthood. And I think in being able to strike a balance between learning to ask for help with things such as finding an apartment that's accessible or finding a personal care provider to help you out in the mornings and the evenings, I believe that's very important in being independent because having to ask for help is sort of a mark of maturity, I feel like. And maturity is a big aspect of being able to be independent because without maturation, you're not really able to learn how to navigate this life sometimes, which can be quite stressful for anybody dealing with a disability. So I would say that independence for me is about striking a balance between asking for help, but also putting yourself out there and sort of stepping beyond your comfort zone, I would say.
Outside your comfort zone. Yep. Good. Well put. Ben, do you want to?
I guess for me, independence is about just being able to provide for yourself without having to rely on your parents for, like, shelter, food, other things. Being able to find the help you need by yourself and sustain yourself by finding different ways to do that, I guess. Bad way to put it.
Thank you very much. Max wants to take a pass. He said he agrees with everything that's said so far, and he still reserves the right of last refusal. And Patrick would like to just agree with what's been said so far, and again, he'll comment in a bit. Jordan, you want to chip in?
I agree with what Ben said mostly about the balance between asking for help and putting yourself out there to help yourself. And for me, I used to have a lot of trouble asking for help, but over the years I've gotten much better at it. Like I would never ask like a schoolmate in middle school, but like after this year, like I've needed it more, so I'm more able to ask people to help me, which has helped a lot. I'm fairly independent right now. I have a learner's permit to drive. I would have a license if I didn't roll through a stop sign. But other than that, that's about it.
They're the red ones, right? That don't
have
the... Yeah. Yeah. Jonathan?
This is going to be short. Basically, striking it out on your own with whatever means necessary. Basically making calls, getting connections, and just going out and doing it. So.
Thanks, Jonathan. Tejas?
Okay. So for me, independence basically means being able to do things without your parents' help. But at the same time, it wouldn't make sense to say do something without any help because you will need help. So for me, independence, while not asking for your parents' help, it means being able to ask for help from other people and being able to advocate for yourself and just basically tell people what you need specifically and not be afraid to tell them what you need because otherwise they're not going to know. So for me, independence is just being able to do your own thing, but while at the same time asking others for help when you need it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any other comments that we want to make before we go on to the next question?
Yeah, I got it.
Yes. Ben?
One thing that I've also noticed about the independence thing is a pride issue that for me personally, that using a wheelchair was sort of a transformation for me, that I was ambulatory for the first 16 years of my life, but then it got a little difficult to walk around. And for me, a big challenge was sort of getting over my own individual pride of saying, how are people going to perceive me? How are my peers going to look at me being in a wheelchair? And I think it's that bit of angst that is sometimes an impediment to being independent because using a wheelchair is a tool for independence, I gradually came to realize. And me being the stubborn kid I was, I really didn't want to hear it. But eventually I came into my own and realized that, you know what, I actually have a lot more freedom. I'm not worried about collapsing anymore. I'm not worried about how I'm going to get from point A to point B. And I realized that using a wheelchair was a tool for independence. And I think that that's also a very important lesson for parents who are seeing their child make that transition from being ambulatory to being in a wheelchair permanently. And for me personally, I was more afraid of what my friends in high school would think, would I be isolated? But it was actually sort of a really great experience that a lot of my friends came out and people I had never even spoken to before were saying, oh man, Ben, what happened? And they were like really genuinely concerned about me being in a wheelchair permanently. And there were so many people basically tripping over themselves to help me out. And I guess that sort of goes to the crux of the idea of finding a balance between asking for help, but also sort of putting yourself out there. And for me, using a wheelchair sort of embodied both concepts, that in a way I sort of was stepping outside of my comfort zone, that I wanted to hold on to walking as long as I could, but at the same time I realized that it wasn't necessarily healthy for me to sort of risk collapsing and actually causing a probably a very bad injury. So I realized that I gained more independence by actually sort of acquiescing and getting over my own pride and sort of learning, so you know what? A wheelchair is not really such a bad deal after all. It's actually something that allows me to be with my peers and other friends and that sort of thing.
Great comments. Great comments. Thank you very much. What we're hearing now is stepping outside your zone of comfort. And we were hearing earlier when we were chatting over lunch is it's much easier just to stay in your own zone and don't take a risk and don't go outside and don't go into these social environments and experiences for the fear of whatever. Once you get there, the fear wasn't worthwhile, wasn't justified, and it's much easier, much better than you'd worried about. So that balance is important in taking a risk. So while we're on that theme of risk and everything, what advice or thoughts do you have for parents to help them to help their son, their young boys, become more independent? And I won't look at anyone. So because you ran the stop line, I'd like to get you first.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Advice for parents.
So.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
So for advice for parents, I think the biggest thing is basically make your kids go outside of their comfort zone. If they can start doing that from a young age, when they get older, it won't be an issue. And I think a very important thing is that parents have to realize that their kids are just like any other kids in that they want to be free and they have the same milestones as other kids, and they want to be independent and do their own thing. So I think parents have to understand that, and they should actually facilitate that kind of thing by perhaps making them go and go to a friend's house and ask friends for help, or finding a friend in school who might be able to help them with something, like a buddy system or something like that. So the biggest thing is basically letting your kids have that independence and facilitating the ability for them to try to be independent. And in fact, the parent should try to force their kids from going outside of their comfort zone, rather than it being the kid who's taking their parents outside of their comfort zone.
Very well put. Very well put. Jordan?
Well, when I was in elementary school, something my parents did to help me get a social life, basically, was they would come into the class at the beginning of the year, and they would explain muscular dystrophy and what it is, how it affects me, and that kind of thing, which, before that, a lot of kids are most likely going to be like, there's something's off with this kid. So I don't really want to approach him or talk to him because I'm nervous and I don't know what his problem is or that kind of thing. So my mom would come in and explain to the class, and that would help. That got me most of my friends in elementary school, which is it helps a lot for parents to do that. And then once I got to middle school and now in high school, I'll explain to my classes if, like, I find it necessary or something. Or if someone asks, I'll tell them.
So that really helped you have the others understand you and,
yes,
and treat you as a normal kid.
Right.
Great. Jonathan?
This is also going to be kind of short. Basically, don't try to be Batman in the corner. And because I always feel like, even at a young age, A lot of kids, even without muscular dystrophy, they always have that feeling of their parents are breathing down their backs constantly. And it's kind of, once the child gets into middle school and high school, the parent kind of needs to back off a little bit. Each year, take a step backward and a step backward and a step backward, and then college, it's like, okay, he's off to college. I'm pretty sure he knows what's going to happen. Let him do it. Let him decide what he wants to do. and just become sort of a metaphorical spotter if the kid goes down academically, physically, emotionally, whatever. Just point them in the right direction and say go, and don't stop.
Metaphorical spotter, I love that. The invisible person.
Yeah.
Patrick?
Some advice I have for parents is you need to learn to let your kids grow up and allow them to fail, because without failing, they won't learn how to become independent without those without learning. And
so learning to fail is part of learning and growing up.
Yeah.
And that's important. Because not many parents want their sons and young men to fail. So it's that balance, isn't it?
Yeah. Sure. And you also need to let your kids have their own social life, because they don't want to be around you all the time. They want to have their own friends and be out on their own.
I think there's agreement from what I just heard. Thank you. Good comments. Very good comments. Anyone here like to?
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of going to go off the theme that we're sort of talking about here, about just sort of letting go to an extent of realizing that your children are actually remarkably resilient for their age. And oftentimes I realize that it's the parents that take the disease a little harder than the child that actually has to deal with it. And I think that's probably because growing up with the disease, you learn to accept it. But I guess letting your child be exposed to circumstances that might be unfavorable is sort of a way of learning trial by error, if you will, that the only way that someone's going to be prepared for the things such as hurt, rejection, and sort of unfavorable situations is if they experience it at an early age. And I think that's sort of a way of showing that when children realize they could actually resolve these situations on their own without any parental help, basically, it sort of empowers them, if you will. So I think that it's always sort of a push and a pull and how you want to support your child, but also you want them to sort of learn on their own. And I think that's easier said than done for anybody who is a parent, because there's always that desire to protect your child from all sorts of harm. But even normal children are sort of thrust into situations that aren't the best for them. And after making it through it, they realize that, you know what, I actually had the strength in myself to actually handle things. So I think that parents just need to give their kids credit when they realize that, listen, my child is actually strong to sort of handle situations on his own without having to come to me all the time and say, Mom, Dad, this is sort of something that's sort of bugging me. But there's nothing wrong with sort of talking to your parents as well. And I think that we as young men at that particular age have a remarkable ability to sort of be self-reliant and seek help whenever we need it and sort of tough it out when it becomes a necessity.
Thank you. Thank you. Wise advice. Ben?
I feel like some advice is just that parents should be there to facilitate independence with their child, like kind of not necessarily forcing it on them, but just if their child like wants to go to a friend's house or something like that, just being there, saying that they can take them over there, or just being there for the child is really good, I think.
Great. Any other comments people want to make? So, wise advice. So now we're going to say, do you have any thoughts or ideas? Obviously, you're successful and you're independent. How you could share those stories with other younger people here today who are listening to you now. Any thoughts for them? Yes. Max.
I think it's good to start with independence in a safe environment like a school. If you start in a school, you can build up on that and do more, I guess.
Excellent, thanks. School, you know, and we were talking about this earlier, we spend an awful lot of time in school. The men spend a lot of time in school, more time in school probably than with you. And so the school environment's hugely important for helping facilitate independence and confidence and all the social skills that you've been hearing about. So school is really important. And again, your parents going in, telling the school, telling your classmates just what your strengths are and why you walk the way you do really helped. So that's very interesting. So what about the younger people out here, the guys, the preschoolers, the grade sixers? grade fives. What advice do you have for them? I'm not looking.
Well, I didn't really want to make a point on like elementary and middle school, but I think that a huge thing of advice I can give is that like asking for help isn't the same as sacrificing independence. In reality, when you ask for help, it's so that you can have more independence. Like, with that help, you can do so much more. Like, if you have people there and you ask them to help you up a ramp when you need help or figure out ways to solve problems that you couldn't handle on your own, it really lets you do more things.
Thanks, Ben.
And I guess for me, for the young men who are still in grade school and middle school, that the thing I would say for them is just to have fun. That once you get to high school and then you get to college, then stuff starts to get serious, actually. But right now, just sort of enjoy life and sort of try, and I guess for parents as well, to sort of put as much normal activity in your kid's life as possible. That for me, when I was younger, even though I had muscular dystrophy, I was playing t-ball, baseball, I was in the Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts. And I think that sort of having your kids around their peer group is very important to getting them to sort of acclimate to living with their disability, accepting it, and just learning to live with who they are. So I guess a piece of advice for anybody who's much younger than I am is just to sort of have fun and just sort of make your life as normal as possible.
Thank you, Ben. Patrick, I think you have the mic.
So I have some advice I have for kids my age is, in high school, it's good to join clubs and put yourself out there and socialize and make lots of friends. It makes you a more independent person because people aren't necessarily going to come to you, so it's better to go to them to make friends with people.
That seems to be a common theme. Put yourself out there. Take a risk. It's not easy, but do it. They may not come to you, so you have to go to them. Good advice. Good advice. Tejas?
Okay. So as far as advice for kids, younger kids with muscular dystrophy, I think the biggest thing is, again, when they're younger, they need to learn to advocate and not have to just depend on their parents. And you can start with small steps. It doesn't have to be like they don't have to talk. They don't have to, I don't know. It could be very simple things. For example, like with my own parents, I was always afraid to, this is kind of silly to like call people on the phone and talk to other people, to strangers. So what they did was basically they said, you have to order the pizza. Like whenever we ordered pizza, they said, that's your job. So I think that definitely did help a lot. And even though that's a small thing, I think just that is enough to give kids confidence, basically that they can do stuff on their own. And another thing is, as one of the other guys had said, school is the best place to learn to be independent. I know like a lot of the kids have aides in school, but I think gradually it's good. Like, for example, in high school, I have an aide, but his job is only my transport aide. So while I'm in a class, he'll be in another class. And if I need something, I can just text him. But otherwise, he's just there to take me from class to class. So I think that's a good step. And even when they're younger, I think they can really depend on their friends. They don't need to depend on an aide. At that point, I actually have a funny story. My cousin, who's 12, he has Duchenne, and a couple of weeks ago, he uses a scooter in school, and his scooter, the battery ran out, so he was in the hallway with a bunch of his friends. So basically, he knew how to tell his friends to put the scooter into manual mode, and he had them push the scooter all the way to the office, and he had one friend push it, and another friend carried his bags for him. So I thought that was like a good story of how you can be independent at that age. You can ask your friends and have some good friends who can definitely help you, not just in school, even as you get older, even when you become an adult, those friends, you can still keep those friends.
Powerful, powerful. Max, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. In school, I think it would be good to pick up activities and then that would lead to a larger group of friends, which can make social things easier, like joining a band or something like that.
Great. Get out there, social activities. So the importance of school and school environment. So we're now asking you, inviting you, encouraging you to come to the microphones. They're in both of the aisles, I think just the two aisles. And we'd welcome your comments, your questions, and the men will pick up as comfortable. So you probably won't direct it to an individual, but if you would like to, that's okay too.
I have three very quick questions. Is it harder for someone with muscular dystrophy to make friends? Secondly, have any of you found you've been picked on because of your disability? And third, this is a completely different question, do any of you play a musical instrument?
Thank you. Those are very good questions. Let's start with the last question first. Anyone musically inclined playing a musical instrument? Jake?
Well, I'm in marching band at school, and I play percussion. And I play the part where you don't march. They're just at the front of the field, so you just stand there and play. I play the chimes, which coincidentally is the tallest instrument in the entire band.
Great.
But that just makes it more entertaining. And I play cymbals and other small percussion things. And as for making friends, marching band helped me make friends the most. And they're the friends that are, like, my closest friends. And like he said earlier about the scooter running out, that's happened to me, like, 12 times. And one of my friends always will, like, push me to class and take my stuff and help me with that.
Great. Your sister's in the band, too, isn't she?
She was.
She's
in college now, so.
Great. Jonathan, were you wanting to say something with that?
To start off the way Jordan did, I am trying to learn the harmonica, despite the fact that, as of now, it sounds more like a dying cat than music. But in terms of making friends, going through elementary school, I was always considered sort of the weird kid. I never really liked actually interacting with people. It put me off. I didn't like talking. I thought it was weird. So I always hung out with the sort of the oddball crowd. But getting into it mostly started in high school and a little bit of middle school. But once high school hit, I got involved with the robotics team, Model United Nations, Japanese Club, and I already been a part of the Boy Scouts. So that sort of widened my friend base. And again, I was always part of the oddball group. But then again, the way I see it, if you're an oddball, might as well hang out with the oddballs because it's more diverse and it's not like we're talking about sports and girls all the time. We're actually talking about something that means something in context. So.
Thank you, Jonathan. Patrick, did you want to say?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
So for instruments, I play piano and I also sing in the chorus at my school and the local community chorus.
Great, thank you. Thais, did you want to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Okay. When I was in like elementary school, I think kids knew that I had something, an issue, but they never thought anything about it. I mean, all the kids accepted it and they knew like I was the kid who had this special chair that I had. So, and it was funny, they would always, all the kids were like, they would be like, oh, can I sit in that? Because they saw how comfy it was. So that was always a funny thing when I was in elementary school. And I think by the time you get to high school, it's good to have a group of friends, some friends definitely, because they can, not only can they help you, but I get for anyone, it helps the transition to high school. And I find that by the time you get to high school, most of the kids have matured enough so that they understand that you have a muscle problem, and they might not know it's a muscle problem. They know you use a wheelchair or not necessarily, but they know that you have some kind of disability. But they understand that it's not like you can do anything about it. So from what I found, most kids seem to understand, and they do include you. But the best thing to help you make friends in high school, to make more friends, is join clubs. That's the best thing you can do. As Jonathan said, he did all those clubs, and that really helped him. So definitely in high school, do clubs. In the past 3 years in school, the main club I've done was Model Congress and Model United Nations, and that's really fun. You make a lot of friends. And as part of that, we also have conferences where we take trips, and I think those conferences have really helped me a lot because it's made me talk to other kids I don't know. And at those conferences, my parents will help me get ready in the morning, and they'll in the night they'll help me get into the bed and all. But during the day, I depend on my friends for help, and I think that's a very good experience too. So that club was very helpful. And clubs like that, which make you speak and advocate, are definitely good for any kid, and especially for kids with disabilities who will need to be able to advocate. And I'm sure some of the other kids who are in college will tell you, definitely do clubs in college too. I think that should definitely help too.
Great, and that's what Max was saying as well. Ben, anything to add? Bullying, musical instruments?
I guess speaking to the idea of whether or not it's more difficult for someone with muscular dystrophy to make friends, I would say it's not necessarily a matter of difficulty, but a matter of difference, that the experience, of course, is going to be different, that you're going to have folks who are initially hesitant about making friends with you, but over time, throughout high school and through undergrad, I realized that sort of hesitancy comes from not this idea to say, I don't want to be around this person, but rather that people are afraid of offending somebody, I've realized. And this usually comes up when people say, I hope you don't mind me asking, but what is your disease about, basically? And it's moments like that when I realize that people have a genuine desire to understand. And maybe that may not happen when you're a child, so to speak, but when you start becoming a young man and a young adult, you begin to realize that, you know what, people are just genuinely curious, and they just want to know how your situation affects you so they could better sort of be around you and respect you, if they will. And I feel like that's sort of a benefit to other people, that I feel like me as a disability, I feel like I'm obligated sometimes to sort of educate people about my situation. So the next time that they come across with another person with another disability, that they'll be sort of prepared to sort of handle the situation and make friends with somebody they would not ordinarily be friends with. So I feel like it's a different experience, not necessarily an experience formed by difficulty. Now, the young women thing, that's a totally different topic, actually. So that could be a little bit of a rocky road there. But even in that extent, I realize that it's all about just being honest with yourself and being honest with the person you're talking to, that usually friendships and relationships are usually the best when people are completely honest with one another. And I think that just putting yourself out there and just being completely candid with somebody is the best way to sort of establish a lasting friendship, because people respect people who are honest and who are willing to talk about themselves without any fear or preconditions about, is this person going to judge me about X or Y and that sort of thing. So I realize just sort of be willing to be candid with people. And I think that's also a risk for people, but it's also very helpful in terms of the dividends it pays down the road.
Thank you, Ben. Very, very good comment. Ben?
With regards to the musical instrument, I was in my high school band for 3 years, and I played percussion, and that was I met a lot of friends through band and just participating in organizations like band. For me, I never really felt like I had a hard time making friends because of my disability. I mean, I'm a mostly introverted person, so that was my difficulty with making friends, was that it had nothing to do with my disability. It had to do with my personality. And as far as like other people being willing to approach me, I find that people don't necessarily see the chair as a reason not to talk to someone. They're more curious, or not, just as Ben said, worried about offending the person with a disability. And I can't remember the other question.
Good, great. Thank you very much. So that's musical instruments, that's making friends, and bullying. So we have another question, please.
Hi, thank you. I had two quick questions also. The first one is, do any of you gentlemen use service dogs? Because I don't see any here, but if you do, I was wondering if you had an issue in school with the dogs. And my second question for the Boy Scouts up there, my 11-year-old just finished his Arrow of Light, and we haven't moved him into Boy Scouts yet because I can't figure out what to ask for in terms of adaptions for the program. So if you have any advice as to handle how to handle Boy Scouts, that would be great.
Who wants the Boy Scouts first?
I am actually an Eagle Scout, so I went through the whole Cub Scout thing as well, so I know exactly what the Order of Light thing is all about and how the transition to Boy Scouts can be a bit of a daunting experience. But I was very fortunate because I came into Cub Scouts with two young men who I've been friends with ever since I was 7 years old, and we transitioned together. We became Bear Scouts, Weeblos, and then we just sort of transitioned into Boy Scouts at the same time and earned our Eagle Scout awards at the same time. So I think if there's somebody within the Cub Scout group that they're peers with or good friends with, is a very sort of helpful thing in terms of making a transition into a slightly more mature area of scouting, which is the Boy Scouts, obviously. So I think if there's somebody that they're friends with within the organization itself, that sort of eases the transition, if you will. So I guess that's sort of one bit of advice that I would give to you if your son is sort of making that transition at this point.
And maybe I'll talk to you after, too, so you can give me more specific advice about, you know, when the boys are camping that weekend, did you go? Did you do something different? Those sorts of things I would be curious about also.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay, thank you.
He bills out at $100 an hour.
So. I know.
He's very good. Right. Just anyone have a service dog?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do Jonathan first about Scouts and then service dog.
Just as Ben said, I'm also an Eagle Scout. I earned mine just before I graduated high school. And I did the whole, I was pretty much a Tiger Cub in kindergarten, and then I went through the whole process with the Cub Scouts and then transferring over to Boy Scouts. The troop that I originally started off with was, we went camping a lot. We went on a couple of whitewater rafting trips. We did a lot of service projects. We also did the one-week summer camping in the Adirondacks. And during those sessions, I was usually with my dad, and we would camp in a tent like everybody else. I remember the one time we were doing winter camping, and at that time I was still ambulatory, so it was pretty much trudging through the snow and using the truck as sort of a rudimentary snowplow, or having a couple of scouts drag me on the sled during the deep snow. And in the Adirondacks, I was also ambulatory, so I'd be walking up and down the mountains on the hills. I remember one time, the first time we were staying, we did the thing called the polar bear, and that was having the scoutmaster put a bugle in your tent, wake you up at 6:15, hike down a 45 degree hill to a freezing cold lake, hike back up, and then start off the day. And we would also like hike up the mountainsides and all that. And basically, for Boy Scouts, it's just having fun. But again, if your son requires adaptive equipment, then basically for every scout troop that you go to, tell the scoutmaster how can the troop adapt with that, or how can the adaptive equipment be used to the advantage of your son in order to be more involved with the troop. I can't really comment on adaptive equipment because, like I said, it was me, my dad, the truck, and the scouts, and I was still walking, and I'm even now, even though I'm in a chair, I'll still get out of the chair and walk around a bit, stretch out, limber up. So
great. And the service dog, Trace?
What was your question again about the service dog?
Just if you had a service dog and how, if you had any problems bringing that dog to school or if you bring it to school.
Before I even answer the question, I think, I don't know if you could tell that I'm excited about this topic, but I think the best thing you could do is get your son a service dog. The whole family will enjoy it, and especially your son. At least if you're a dog person, you'll really enjoy the service dog. For me, more than anything, my dog is, he's a canine assistance dog. His name is Greg. He's 10 now, so he's 10 or 11. We don't take him out that much anymore. But, I never took him to school, but more than anything, he was a very good companion dog. I think as far as taking your service dog to school, if the school is not too big, I think you could do that. That would be a good idea. For me, my elementary school was very big. My middle school is very big, and my high school is very big. So for me, just taking my service dog, I don't think would work out for me, given that, like, in my grade in the senior class that I'm going to be in, there's about 600 kids. So it wouldn't be a good idea in my school. But if the school is small enough, I would recommend that you do take the dog out and get him used to that and go out and do all that stuff. But I think more than anything, even if the dog can't help you, my dog wasn't always the most helpful dog. he doesn't always listen to me. So even though he didn't always listen, he's a good companion. And I always say he's my best friend. Even though I have very good friends, I still say he's my best friend. So definitely if you can take him to school, I think that's good. That keeps the dog active. And the dog will probably listen a lot better than my dog if you start that early.
That's funny. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yes, I think we have time for another question or comment.
Hi, I'm interested in hearing more about your experiences and thoughts on having an aide at school and how that impacts your social relationships and independence.
Okay, anyone who would like to?
Okay, so for me, as far as the aide situation goes, I've had an aide throughout school. So in elementary school, I had an aide, and that aide was a lot more involved. She would go with me to different classes, and I mean, I was ambulatory at the time. I could still get around on my own. So the aide was just there. She didn't have to be there. So in my school, we have one school for grades 1 to K to 4. So then after that, we have an intermediate school for grades 5 and 6, and one in that school, I also had an aide. And that aide, at that time, walking was a little bit harder for me, so the aide was necessary from class to class. And in middle school, that's when I started using a wheelchair. And when I was in 7th grade, I had a manual chair, so my aide was definitely necessary. She had to push the chair around. But I found once I got my power chair in 8th grade, I was a lot more independent, and the aide really didn't have to be there that often. So once I got to 8th grade, it was like the aide was there, but she really didn't have to be there in my classes. She would, because she didn't have to go anywhere else at that time. But there was even a time when she had to go out of town, and I didn't need a substitute aide, because with the wheelchair, I could get around myself and ask other people for help. And now in high school, the aide that I have is more of a transport aide, so he works in a lot of other classrooms, and his job is just to take me from class to class and get me my books, and he helps me with the restroom. But otherwise, he's really not involved in my classes, and like, my friends know he's there, but a lot of my friends, they won't even like say hi to him or recognize him, which is funny. He always says, "What am I, chopped liver?" So that's funny. I have one friend who actually does call him by his name. But other than that, he's not there in the classes with me, but I talk to him a lot. I would say we're good friends, I guess. He's a tech guy, so I get to talk a lot with him about that.
And you text him a lot, don't you?
Tweet, yeah. Definitely, yep. He has a BlackBerry, so
good.
That's how if I have to go to the restroom, I just text him. So that's a good thing. But I think the best thing is just to have for all the boys, I think it's best to have an aide just to take them from class to class. I definitely don't think they need to be there in the classroom. Usually all the other students are very helpful, and even the teachers are quite helpful. Sometimes when my aide isn't there and I need something for a class, some of the teachers will offer to get it out. And often I just tell my friend, "Oh, can you get this binder out?" It's always helpful to have color-coded binders. That way you can just say, "This, the green binder, the red binder." That's what I have. So in general, I think it's good just to have I think you should have an aide. Well, if you don't need an aide, then definitely you don't need to get an aide. But I think if you do, the best thing would be just to have them take you from class to class, but not stay in your class.
Great. Thank you very much. We're in about 30 seconds. So, Jordan, I'm sorry to cut you short, but just a couple of words.
An aide, exactly. I just have my friend that helps me a lot.
Okay.
And there's this one time where I was on my scooter on the sidewalk, and these people were being really slow, so I went off-road around them, And then my scooter wouldn't go back in the sidewalk. It got stuck. So I see my friend, like, running across the quad, and he just picks up the scooter with me in it and just puts it back on the sidewalk.
Wow. Did you go over the curb? Or?
Yeah, I did. It was
another stop sign. Yeah. I'll leave it there. Last comment goes to Ben, and then we'll wrap up.
I'll try and keep this short as possible, but my first experience with a personal carry came during my undergrad experience, where it was sort of a jarring experience in the sense that for the first time I was relying on somebody other than my parents. But I realized that it really wasn't much of a hindrance in terms of establishing friendships on college, on campus, and having the aide sort of be there every single day. That for me, I was fortunate enough just to have the aide need to come in the morning and in the evening sometimes. But ultimately, I started relying on my roommates actually during the evening and also on the weekends, and that sort of helped balance it off, where the aide would simply come in the morning and I would basically sort of have enough trust with my roommates and other friends on campus to assist me in the evening and also on the weekends. But I guess one lesson I would say about finding a personal care provider for the college level is to start early. That my family and I had a very difficult time finding somebody at first, and there was sometimes a bit of turnover that would happen with each passing year, that by the senior year I had probably about utilized three different personal care aides. So I would think that if you're trying to figure out a resource or somebody that can be there to help your son while they're in college, basically the thing is to start early now, because it can be a very difficult process at the end of the day.
Start early. What a privilege this has been. I can't thank you enough for showing us what independence is. So thank you very much. Thank you, thank you. So this closes our session, but I remind you that these guys are cruising around. They'd love to have your questions, your comments for the rest of the meeting. And siblings, anyone who would like to approach them, they'd be more than happy to speak with you and hear from you. Thanks very much, and enjoy the rest of the meeting.